the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, it is a Monday. Another week begins. It is Monday, March 24th, and this hour of Flames Talk's underway. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media along with you this hour. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
It's good to have you back.
It's good to be back.
We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, and hey, we got lots to talk about. There's some news from Flames camp. There's a two-game homestand starting, and there are 13 games to go this regular season. Now, let's also welcome in Derek Wills, the voice of the Flames, as we get to our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary airport. And gents, full disclosure, I was in the dentist chair for 5 hours, so I did not end up at practice.
Five hours?
Yeah, it's a big big procedure. I'll show it to you. Show it to you on Tuesday. But as that was going on, Flames were on the ice, and not only did Michael Backlund take part in the team picture, he also participated in an entire practice, was centering a line with Blake Coleman once again. And Wilsey, as you were saying, was right there taking first unit penalty kill reps with Kevin Rooney. Now, no official word whether or not he's going to play on Tuesday versus Seattle or not, but all signs pointing to that. So what did we make of Michael Backlund's return to practice on Monday? And maybe more importantly, what does his, I think we can now call, imminent return mean to the Flames?
Yeah, it was certainly a pleasant surprise. So I was sitting inside of Scotiabank Saddledome all by myself. I'm sure some other members of the media were down below, but I'm sitting in the stands by myself. And he was doing some work with Matt Stajan, which I wasn't necessarily expecting to see this morning. And you know, then my next question was, is he going to stick around for practice? So after they cleaned up the benches, after the team picture, guys came onto the ice and Michael Backlund stayed on the ice. And you know, he was on the ice before everybody else. He was a full participant in practice, centering a line with Joel Farabee and Blake Coleman. As you pointed out, he was alongside Kevin Rooney on the penalty kill, and he stayed out there after the main part of practice came to an end as well. I did have a chat with the captain in the dressing room after practice, and you know, just talked about what a great road trip it was for the team, and asked him how he was feeling, and he said he was feeling better. I don't know that he is or will be at 100% between now and the end of the season, but I do think that him having almost six full games off has helped them get closer to being 100%. And you know, the Flames have missed him. They've missed him. Well, think about that game against the Canucks. I wonder if they win that game. And that was a 3-point swing, you know, with them going from leading that game and potentially winning that game in regulation time to, you know, losing that game and only getting a point with the Canucks getting two. So it was a game where I think if Michael Backlund plays and takes some important defensive zone faceoffs and is out there in the penalty kill and matched up against the other team's top players, maybe the Flames find a way to close that one out. They have really struggled in the faceoff circle since he's been out. He might not have the best faceoff percentage on the team, but I think the reason for that is because he takes almost all of their shorthanded faceoffs, and teams are always putting him on his wrong side to start the penalty kill, so that makes it tough. But you know, they've missed him in so many ways. Now, with that said, I think the guys as a group have done a really good job kind of picking up the slack. We knew they weren't going to replace Michael Backlund with one guy, so they've done it by committee. But you know, the sooner they can get him back, especially if he is feeling better, the better off the team is going to be, especially with some tough matchups coming up this week.
Yeah, you definitely would love to have the captain back up your sleeve for some of those home ice matchups. You have an opportunity then to make sure you have your best shutdown guy against whoever you consider to be the top threat on the other side. You'd certainly like to have him back up your sleeve for faceoffs. There's a reason he takes more defensive zone draws than anyone else in the NHL, whether his percentage indicates it or not. He's the guy that Ryan Huska trusts to get it done. And You know, the thing that I'd add, guys, is as soon as you have Michael Backlund back in your lineup, you just have a sort of depth that you don't have. And by that, I just mean, I think it gets you back to having 10 forwards that you think are capable of playing in top nine roles, mm-hmm. which means that if someone isn't carrying their weight, and in this case, maybe it's a guy like Yegor Sharangovich, you can bump him out of that spot, whether you use it to healthy scratch a guy, whether you use it to get a guy a night off who could maybe, you know, use it to recover from an injury, whether, you know, you start to look at, okay, well, who's our best option against a heavier team as opposed to a more skilled team? However you want to make those decisions, if you have 10 forwards capable of playing in the top nine, I think it goes a long way. You know, what we didn't see today on the ice at practice was Martin Pospisil, a guy who was officially termed maintenance. I think if you watch Saturday's game against the New York Islanders, if you saw his sort of lack of separation skating wise in a couple of instances, you wouldn't be going out on a very long limb to guess that Martin Pospisil has been playing through something himself. And so whether it allows you to give him a night off, maybe just give him a few more practices off or a little less ice time, it just, as soon as Michael Backlund's back, and I fully expect it to be tomorrow, it just gives you depth that you don't have without him.
Yeah, I mean, Willsey, as soon as you texted me that he was also doing first unit penalty kill reps, I'm like, yeah, okay, I think he'll be back on Tuesday, but nothing official, and there's always setbacks and all that type of stuff, so we will wait and see when Tuesday comes. But if it's Tuesday or if it's Thursday against Dallas or whenever Michael's ready to return, I got to say, guys, like, with the way that line of Frost, Huberdeau, and Coronado played in the backstretch of the road trip, it all of a sudden makes you feel that much more excited about Calgary's top nine. And now you're not in a situation where you're kind of cringing when one line goes out there. And credit where credit's due, I thought Sharangovich had a very strong game against the Devils, but I thought that he struggled the rest of the trip in a very, very large way, and that line struggled as a result. And, you know, we know that Sharangovich is not having a great year, and putting him at center adds that much more burden onto his shoulders. Well, now you can free him up somewhere, however you want to do that, and you can get Backlund back to playing the role that, you know, he plays all the time. He and Blake Coleman go up against the heaviest hitters on the other side and take the vast majority of defensive zone faceoffs, and nobody's taken more D-zone faceoffs in the NHL than Backlund has. I know the penalty kill numbers are there too when it comes to faceoffs, and he's just so massive on Calgary's penalty kill. It just, but when I look at it 5-on-5, I just, all of a sudden you're like, well, the way that Kadri line has come together since they've reunited it from last season, and that brand new line, and specifically the way Huberdeau and Coronado are playing right now, you're like, okay, well, now you've got a line that you're even that much more comfortable burying in defensive situations. What could that then mean for the Frost line and the Kadri line, who have had to take on a little bit more heavy lifting without Michael Backlund in the lineup? So, yeah, long story short, that's a pretty massive return. If he's not back on Tuesday, then on Thursday or whenever, but it's imminent, and that's pretty important down the stretch here.
Yeah, and all signs pointed to him returning tomorrow, but Ryan Huska made a really good point when he addressed the media today, saying, we've got to see how he's feeling after his first practice with the team. And it might not be a setback, but it might be okay, if we give him a couple of more days off, he might be closer to 100% and ready to return for what looks on paper like a tougher matchup on Thursday than what the Flames will have tomorrow. So we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But what I like is that the Flames have some options. So, you know, if things aren't working, you could always go back to Kadri and Huberdeau on the same line, because that was a dynamic duo for most of the season. But, you know, they've gone back to the Kadri and the kids line, and Kadri between Zary and Pospisil has looked good. And to your point, that new connection between Huberdeau and Coronado has been a ton of fun to watch. And I think Frost has done a good job between them. And then if you were to have a checking line that could also contribute offensively with Backlund between Farabee and Coleman, then that line's going to do a lot of heavy lifting. And with some tough matchups coming up, even if the Oilers are without McDavid and Draisaitl on Saturday. We saw them pile up the goals last night with Nugent Hopkins getting a hat trick. So you still have some tough matchups in the Battle of Alberta coming up on Saturday. And then you've got some options for your fourth line. So you guys talked about Sharon Govich. It kind of looked like he was a placeholder for Pospisil, but who knows if Pospisil is going to be able to play tomorrow night. So maybe that's where he slots in. But if Pospisil does play, you can put Sharon Govich potentially on your fourth line, or I guess you could help you scratch him as well. So I like the fact that when Backlund's back, the Flames have a lot more options as far as what combinations they can use.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. And gents, you take a look at this last road trip where the Flames end up going 3-1. They win their last three and bounce back masterfully after that debacle in Toronto and essentially do what you want to do. Every team sustains a blowout loss here and there throughout a season. And you need to, when it's all said and done, hey, make sure that it's just a 2-point loss. I mean, it's no worse than any other loss. It just probably feels worse because of the score. And the Flames did that by winning three straight on the road and come back home with three straight wins. They also were able to go 2-2-2 on that monster six-game trip a little earlier as well. So I want to ask you about Dan Vladar, guys, because Dan Vladar, he played three of the games on the six-game road trip and two of the games on the most recent four-game road trip. How important has Vladar been for the Flames here as they try to keep themselves in this playoff race and continue to keep themselves in this playoff race?
Yeah, Pat, before I answer your question about Dan Vladar, you snuck in a really important point there. The Flames were not a good road team in the first half of the season. They have been a really good road team in the second half of the season. You know, them picking up three wins during that four-game road trip, even them, to your point, going 2-2-2 during what was the toughest road trip of the season, where you played four of the last seven Stanley Cup champions and five perennial Stanley Cup contenders. You know, they've done a really good job outside of Scotiabank Saddledome. So we'll see if they can win a couple of home games this week before they head back on the road for three. But, you know, Dan Vladar has done a really good job. And remember what happened leading up to the month of February. He was struggling, and the team was struggling to give him goal support, and he had lost six straight. Well, since the start of February, he has helped the Flames pick up a point in five of the six games that he started. And he's 4-1-1 in six starts since the beginning of February. So with every point meaning so much to the Flames in this three or four horse race for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference, the fact that Dan Vladar has come in and has helped them pick up, doing the math here, nine of a possible 12 points in his last six starts is massive. But then there's the other side of it. The fact that he's playing well and the Flames feel like they can win with him in net has allowed them to, I think, put Dustin Wolf in a better position to be at his best. If Dan Vladar was still struggling, would the Flames feel comfortable giving both goaltenders three starts on that six-game road trip or two starts on this last four-game road trip? Probably not, guys. They're probably leaning really heavily on Dustin Wolf, and maybe that wears him out. You know, it is his first full season in the NHL. He's 23 years old and, you know, having to go through the travel for the first time and playing against new teams and new buildings for the first time. I think that can take a toll on you. But the fact that Vladar has played as well as he has and has given the Flames an opportunity to win every night in his last six starts, I think it puts Wolf in a way better spot as well.
I think, yeah, it alleviates a little bit of pressure, I think, when both guys are playing well. You know, if the quote-unquote workhorse isn't playing well, it's a ton of pressure on the backup, and we've seen that in years past where Dan Vladar was suddenly thrust into that number one role and it was sort of uncharted territory for him. And likewise, if the backup is not performing well, I think it puts way too much pressure on the starter. Like if Dan Vladar, and this was the case kind of leading into, it's an interesting conversation today because I think the turnaround for Dan Vladar in a lot of ways happened against the Seattle Kraken. But if you go back to before the break, like it didn't feel like you could count on him to get wins in sort of any circumstance. And yeah, he was getting a lot of off-speed pitches on the back half of back-to-backs and stuff like that. But if you can't count on your backup to get you some victories, I think it just puts a ton of pressure on the starter. And I think what Dan Vladar has done in the past few weeks since he returned from the break is really show his teammates, hey, you guys can count on me. I'm going to give you quality starts whenever I'm in there. I think what he's shown Dustin Wolf is, you know, when you need a night off, I'm going to be there. And I don't know that it's a conscious thing, guys, where Dan Vladar Dustin Wolf is sitting there going, geez, I don't know if I can trust Vladar. I just think it takes a lot of pressure off the sort of goaltending committee as a whole when both guys are sharp. And Dan Vladar has certainly been that, kind of going back to right before that Four Nations break.
Yeah, I remember us talking, I think the three of us on a round table going into that game in Seattle, and Dan Vladar won that game February 2nd, and talking about, guys, if he doesn't win this game, you know, are we talking about somebody else as Dustin Wolf's tandem mate to come out of the Four Nations break? Well, he played well on the road in Seattle and made that game-saving stop, or at the very least win-saving stop, late in the third period with like a second to go to preserve the 3-2 win as Seattle really started to push. And then since the Four Nations break, I mean, we're talking about big wins against some good teams. I know that, you know, the Rangers weren't a very good team that night, but that's beat the Rangers. Obviously was in net for the win against the number one team overall against Washington. You know, was spectacular against Florida despite getting zero run support. And preserved the win with a couple of huge stops, one late in regulation and one in overtime against the Islanders on Saturday. And you threw out the number, Wilsey, 4-1-1 with that 919 save percentage since February 2nd. So in the last 2 months, he has been significantly better. It's done a lot, guys. It has, as we mentioned, taken some of the heat off of Dustin Wolf and, you know, taken some of the load off of his shoulders, and also has made it so that, you know, the Flames can, especially on the road, feel like they've got a tandem and can trust both guys. And that keeps your number one guy, who just happens to be Dustin Wolf, fresher than he would be otherwise if you didn't have trust in the other guy. So I think Dan Vladar's done a nice job of, you know, really reopening the conversation about whether or not he's back next year. I think that is a far more, I think people are talking about that way more now than they were in December and January. And he has really, with 13 games to go, made it very interesting to see how the Flames are going to utilize their goalies in the final stretch of the season. So I give him a lot of credit, because I don't know if I saw it coming the way things were going, but he's been great. He's been really great, especially since coming back from the Four Nations break.
All right, let's play the goalie game, which Aaron Vickers always loses. Three games this week. You had two games at home. You got the Kraken, a non-playoff team, and the Stars, a Stanley Cup contender. And then you head on the road for a game against an Oilers squad that might not have McDavid or Draisaitl. What do the Flames do with their goalies this week?
I think they go Wolf to begin with. I think they go Wolf in both games at home, and maybe do Vladar against the Oilers on Saturday. That is my guess.
Makes sense. He's played well up in Edmonton.
Played well against Edmonton. Wolf has been so good on home ice.
This is going to sound like a strange answer after I just talked about how good Dan Vladar is, but my next three games would go Wolf. Then I'd start Vladar in one of the back-to-backs.
Okay.
Now, hey, that's the reality of being a backup. And yeah, he's played great. And yeah, I'd consider changing that game plan for this week if Dustin Wolf has a tough one. But the reality of the backup is, if you're at home and you've had proper rest and you need to win these games, you're probably going with your number one guy. And that's still Dustin Wolf. Don't take anything away from what Dan Vladar has done in the past few weeks, but that's still Wolf for me, which is why my upcoming goaltending rotation is pretty simple.
Yeah.
So is it Wolf, 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 Vladar, So you go with Wolf as well in Colorado, and then you go to Vladar in Utah?
Probably. I mean, is there any reason, guys, to shy away from that other than maybe continuing to show that faith you have in Vladar?
I don't think so. And the other thing about him playing well is that I think his confidence has to be high now. So he understands his role with this team. He understands that Wolf's the number one guy now and probably will be for a long time. And I think he's accepted that. And I think it's way easier to be the number two guy if you feel good about your game. And he's got to feel good about his game, 4-1-1 in his last six starts. So if he has to wait until next Tuesday to play again, I know he wants to play, but I think he'll be okay with that.
I'd still go Wolf, Wolf, Vladar, Wolf, Vladar, back to Wolf. That's what I'd do.
I'm not going to answer my own question because I'll just be wrong.
Nobody's wrong here except Vixie. Didn't we decide that?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. That's correct. You're right.
He is the wrongest of the wrong. see you Tuesday at Morning Skate. Thank you as always, Willsy.
Okay, guys. Have a good night. Derek, nice weather.
Absolutely. It's beautiful, though. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, and that will wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary airport.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, it is Flames Talk as a new week is underway. It is Monday, March 24th. My name is Pat Steinberg with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media this week here in our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. And we are well underway. We've got lots to talk about on this Monday. And Flames gave us something new to talk about on this Monday as well, because Monday morning, as it is March Madness, it is college free agent signing time. The Flames announced a college free agent signing, and they're dipping into the goaltending pool and going to Notre Dame as we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. And we say hello to brand new Calgary Flames signing. Goaltender Owen Say of Notre Dame is with us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Owen, appreciate the time. It's Pat and Wes. How are you on this Monday?
I'm doing great, guys. Great to be here.
Well, tell us about today. It's your first NHL contract and a big day. I'm just curious as to whenever we talk to somebody who's just signed their first deal, I'm always interested to see how they're feeling right in the moment. How's it hitting for you?
I mean, I feel like it truly hasn't sunk in yet, but no, I've been smiling ear to ear all day. So it's been good. The phone's been blown up a little bit, but besides that, it's been awesome.
Take us through the last few days as you were making your decision and what this lead up to signing has been like.
Yeah, so I think on Thursday night I had a good talk with my parents, obviously coming to close on our decision, and obviously we decided that this would be the best for me, and so I think we talked to the coaching staff on Friday and made it official, and then I signed the contract Saturday and obviously had it announced today. So now the past half week has been a dream come true, really. I'm so excited and I can't wait to get to Calgary.
So tell us about kind of the process and what goes into making your decision, what goes into evaluating some of the different options on the table. You had talked about speaking with your parents and consulting with them. I guess just take us through that side of it from a guy who is fielding a few offers.
Yeah. So one of the big things for me and obviously my family and just being here at Notre Dame, that was one of the big hands in the decision-making process was just like leaving school a year early. Obviously the degree from Notre Dame would be super helpful for me down the road in life and after hockey. So that was one thing that we were really, really focused on. And but as far as just what Calgary has to offer, I think it's the best opportunity I can get. And then obviously with it being an NHL contract, like you can't say no, right? So, and it's something I've been working for my whole life. So to finally have it signed, have it happen, you know, it's a dream come true, like I said.
So what were the conversations like with the Flames leading up to you making your decision, and what about their opportunity appealed to you so much?
Yeah, so earlier in the week, I talked to the goalie guys with Calgary. I talked to Jordan Seguin, Mackenzie Skapski, and obviously, I think one of the biggest things right away was just like how excited they are for me to be there, like the amount of interest they've shown and all the things that they see in me and the potential in me. So, you know, there's nothing greater to be excited for than to work with guys like that, that obviously want me to develop and obviously be at that level. So, yeah.
We're chatting with Owen Say. He has signed a one-year contract with the Flames. It kicks in next season. Owen just finished his season at the University of Notre Dame. Free agent signing goaltender from London, Ontario, joining us here on Flames Talk on this Monday afternoon. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Wes?
Owen, congratulations on the deal.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You mentioned that that chat you had with Jordan Sigalette and Mackenzie Skapski. I had a good chat with Jordan earlier today, and he mentioned there was a PowerPoint involved that he wanted to show you as part of that. Pat, you probably won't be surprised to hear that Pat and I don't often get PowerPoints shown to us about our potential. So maybe you can take us behind the scenes a little bit. What is that presentation like, and what's sort of going through your mind in that moment?
Yeah, so when it was shown to me, like, we had a Zoom call, and so obviously they were showing me going through it, just giving me the goalie department, obviously everyone that I'll meet when I get there. And, obviously that's a great thing to do right away, that I think just like, getting to know who you're working with beforehand. And then obviously they end up showing me like the depth that they have, and obviously it was one thing that was good for me to see visually, just so that I can get a better understanding of, you know, the depth they have. And like I said, like the opportunity that's ahead of me. And then they also had like what they had to offer, and then all the things that they see well in me and all my different attributes. So, but yeah, no, it was really well put together, and it was nice of them.
What do you see as your greatest attributes as a goalie?
For me, I'd say I'm a pretty competitive guy. I absolutely hate getting scored on or even having pucks in my net, even in practice. Aside from that, I really take pride in my footwork and my edges and my hockey IQ, just like reading and anticipating plays. But yeah, stuff like that.
You mentioned a couple times, you know, what a dream come true this is for you. I know you know, you didn't have maybe the most obvious path in terms of an NHL prospect. Like you're a guy who played junior A, who played in the BCHL, played at Mercyhurst, now at Notre Dame. When did stopping pucks for a job, like when did stopping pucks professionally start to feel like something you were capable of?
I'd say once I got done my first or my second year at Mercyhurst, and I ended up going to my first NHL camp, and just the feedback I got from that, I was like, okay, like it's time to kick it up a notch and like see what we can do. And so obviously got to Notre Dame, and I had a good first month and kind of just took it from there. And so, I mean, I ended up having a good season in the end and a good finish to the season. So, but yeah.
Owen, tell us about playing at the University of Notre Dame and what's it like being on a historic campus like that. And obviously we know everything that goes into the tradition of being in South Bend, Indiana. What was being a member of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish like this past year?
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. You know, I truly believe that this place is the best place on earth and definitely the best school in the country. So, but no, like everything about this place, the culture, the people, just the scenery of everything, all the architecture as well, like top to bottom, this place is just it. Like this has probably been like the best year of my life being here. And like one thing I want to do is just say thank you to like all my coaches from this year, all my teammates, all the extended staff, the trainers. Like it's just been, it's been so amazing. I'm so lucky and fortunate to have been here. And, you know, I can't say thank you enough.
How many football games did you get to attend?
I think I was able to go to a few in the fall before our season started, but that was, I've never been to a college football game until this year. So it was pretty cool to be at. The atmosphere gets pretty crazy. But no, there's so much fun, and obviously the football team had quite the year, so that was fun to watch too.
Okay, so what's it like, you know, Notre Dame? We all know, you know, the movies and Rudy and everything that goes into the University of Notre Dame. But what's it like being a hockey player for such a famous school, such a famous program? Like, what is the support like for the hockey team? What's it like being an athlete of another sport?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, and one of the special things is like you can still be normal, I guess, if that makes sense. Like when I go to class, like every now and then I'll get a couple of comments like oh, like good game last week and stuff like that. But aside from that, like everybody's there participating in school. So, but no, aside from that, like I said before, it's just like everyone's so special here and supportive. So, I mean, regardless, it's just been, it's been amazing.
How'd you make the transition? We've talked to, and we've heard you mention Mercyhurst a couple of times. So how did the decision get made to make the transfer and enter the portal and go to Notre Dame for this past season?
Yeah. So after my second year coming to a close, is like I said, like when I think really started to realize like, okay, like I know I can get to that next level. So for me, I think I just wanted to put myself in the best situation possible. And for me, that was kind of taking a chance, entering the portal and just getting to a really strong conference in NCAA. And so Notre Dame obviously, put themselves forward and was one of the cards on the table. And I mean, with the conference it is, you're playing all the big name teams. You're playing Michigan State, Minnesota, Michigan. Like, so I mean, what better conference to be in than to get, or to get exposure than the Big Ten. So, and obviously for the education to go alongside Notre Dame, like it was obviously hard for me to say no. So.
And you've done some moving around in your career. Cause you know, you're an Ontario guy and you started playing junior hockey in Ontario, but then you made the shift and went cross country and spent a couple of seasons in the BCHL with Salmon Arms. So how does a London, Ontario guy, an Ontario product, end up playing a couple of seasons, like not too far from where we are in Salmon Arm?
Yeah. Well, so growing up and when I first started junior hockey, I was drafted by the Knights in the OHL. And so when I was around 15, 16, 17, I think my aspirations were entirely to play CHL hockey. And so after that, I was a bit of a late bloomer. So once I got to like, I was like 18 and played my first year junior A, I was like thinking that the college route would probably be late for me. I'm a little bit of a late bloomer and need more time to develop. So I wanted to try to get out to the BCHL, which I think is the best junior A league in Canada, and or was at the time. Obviously with the whole CHL rule and NCAA thing, now it's obviously a little different, but no, at the time I wanted to get to the BCHL, obviously put me in the best situation to get a scholarship. So, but yeah, no, my time in the BCHL was amazing. Yeah, I was in Salmon Arm, so it was a pretty cool spot. I mean, the scenery out in BC is pretty special. It's not, obviously not much different than Alberta, but, you know, I was really fortunate to be out there and in such a good spot and with great billets as well. So, yeah.
We're chatting with Owen Say, who signed a one-year contract with the Flames today. College free agent signing out of the University of Notre Dame. That contract kicks in next season. He's joining us here on Flames Talk for a couple more with Pat and Wes. Wes?
Oh, and whether it was a favorite as a kid or someone you really like watching now, like, is there anyone you're trying to sort of model your goaltending game after?
Growing up, I was always a Carey Price and a Marc-Andre Fleury fan. But I'd say now I always love watching UC Saros, just because being able to be, like, relatively undersized compared to the rest of the NHL goalies, but just move the way he does and be athletic like that. Like, it's so special to watch. And so, you know, it's always fun to watch him. So I'd say UC Saros.
I probably don't have to tell you there's another young guy in Calgary who's doing some things as a relatively undersized goalie this winter as well.
Yeah. No, exactly. Same thing. He's obviously got just absolutely amazing footwork, and he's incredibly athletic as well. But yeah, no, I'd say Wolfie's up there too, for sure.
What, you mentioned just what a special place Notre Dame is. Maybe we can just wrap on this note. Like, it sounds like you'd probably stay on campus forever if they'd let you. And yet you have this amazing opportunity to now go play professional hockey. How do you sort of, I guess, wrap your head around that transition? How do you now turn the page to what comes next?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I have such a good support system and like so many friends that are in that pro situation. So, I mean, one thing that, like, obviously I can do is get help from them. But I think one of the great things about Notre Dame is they prepare you for that next step. And so I think for me, just from what I've learned, even being here just 1 year, is that, like, I'll go in and, you know, be ready. And, yeah.
Well, congratulations on what's a really cool few days for you, Owen. Congratulations on the contract. Good luck wrapping up your classes at Notre Dame. And, whenever you get out to Calgary, be safe, enjoy yourself, and we're looking forward to seeing you on the ice next season. Thanks so much for doing this today, hey?
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much, guys.
Owen Say is a college free agent signing of the Calgary Flames, goaltender out of the University of Notre Dame, signed Monday to a one-year deal. It's a one-year two-way deal that kicks in next season at $872,500, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. And it's pretty that's a cool story. Like, a guy that has jumped around, bounced around, and been all over North America in his career, from Ontario to the Shuswap to Mercyhurst and then to Notre Dame, and now has his first NHL contract that kicks in next year.
They're always such fun conversations, aren't they? And thanks so much to Owen for joining us. Like, I can't even imagine the sort of spinorama your head would be doing on a day like today.
No,
but I know that there's a lot of excitement around the Saddle Dome. There's a lot of intrigue. Owen Say faced a ton of rubber this year. That Notre Dame team was not one of the stronger teams in the Big Ten Conference. I think, he finished with a 10-15 win-loss record, yeah, and yet with a 9.20 save percentage.
Third best in the Big Ten.
Which I think tells you a lot. And you know, Jordan Sigalette, who's been scouting him, even going back to his Mercyhurst days, Mackenzie Skapski, they think there's a lot of upside here. And it's going to be really interesting that there's a lot of question marks about the Flames' goaltending puzzle going into next season, right? Does Dan Vladar re-sign? Do they keep Walter Ignatiev in the organization? Do they keep Connor Murphy in the organization? Do they ultimately sign Arseniy Sergeyev when he finishes his NCAA season? So there's a lot of unknowns, but Owen, say, fills one of those spots. And I think there's a lot of excitement about what he might be capable of.
Yep. And good on him. He's got himself his first professional contract. He signed it on Monday. I know there's still a lot of intrigue over Calgary product Carter King, who starts his NCAA tournament with the University of Denver coming up this weekend. Denver opens up against Providence College in the opening round of the NCAA hockey tournament. So, you know, he's a Calgary product, and he's a guy that has been linked to the Flames. He's a guy that has been linked to the Flames in that there's reported interest of the Flames in him. And we'll see. We'll see if that ends up coming to fruition. But the Flames are one of the latest teams to jump in on the college free agent frenzy of signings.
Yeah, and you can get intriguing players out of this level. I think the Flames have done relatively well. Like, we haven't seen stars come out of the college ranks. You don't get a lot of undrafted stars out of the college ranks, but the Flames have found, they've found contributors from the college game, right? They found guys like Garnet Hathaway and Walker Dewar. And, you know, I know that there's still a lot of upside to Sam Morton, even though he's a bit of an older guy. And so these are worthwhile gambles at this time of year. And they're also an avenue for a team to really sort of fill some gaps on the depth chart. And I think that's what we're talking about today. Like, the Flames have some young guys goaltending wise in the system, and a couple guys still in Russia, but in the early 20s beyond Dustin Wolf, I'm not sure they know who that next guy is going to be. Is it going to be Sergeyev? Is it going to be Owen Say? You can fill some gaps on your depth chart, and, you know, on a one-year deal to get a guy with potential into your organization and see what it looks like. I don't think you can really go wrong there.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's a college free agent signing. It's if it ends up working out, great. If it doesn't,
yeah,
there's really nothing to lose when it's all said and done, right?
No, it's not our money.
It's definitely not our money. I can tell you that much. It's Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson this hour on Flames Talk. It's good to have Shan Vergy back. Shan's back, and Cam Hughes, Noah Abel, our producers this hour on Flames Talk. And this hour coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.